Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another political TV Talkers episode. Actually, just kidding. We don't focus on politics here, only if it's in TV shows. And that is what that is the TV show we're going to be dealing with tonight, The West Wing, live at 5:30 on 101.5 UMFM. It's your host, Tiago, along with
Matt,
Braden,
and the unusual guy, Simon.
Yep. We're here for another exciting episode. And of course, we really like Aaron Sorkin. We talked about the newsroom. That was last summer, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, holy smoke. That was just a long time ago. So now we're talking about The West Wing, which is another classic. And we want to thank Matt and Braden. And shout out to Farron, who's
with us in spirit.
With us in spirit. Hopefully you're doing well in the interview there, Farron. And so they pitched the idea to talk about West Wing. And here we are.
You got to give full credit to Matt and Farron. I had nothing to do with that.
Well,
so
you have
props to you guys.
Well, you have season one on DVD, don't you?
I have the entire series on DVD.
There you go. So that's you get credit there. Anybody?
I actually have a question for you guys. It's a little bit of news.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Disney was rumored to be announcing their own streaming service, and now they're for sure. It's said that they're going to be announcing their own streaming service live in 2019.
So wait, say again.
Disney had a deal with Netflix a couple years ago.
To take their content
their
off.
They put their shows and their movies on Netflix, I think, in like 2016.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then I think late last year that Disney said they were considering their own streaming service in the future.
Yes.
And just recently it was announced that streaming service will be live in the United States next year, 2019, and then worldwide after that. So presumably they're going to test out in the United States.
If there's any company that has the funds to make original shows and everything, yeah, no doubt Disney would be great for that.
Speaking of funds, though, my question is, do you guys, I mean, I think we're all Disney fans to an extent, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say to
varying levels.
Yeah, to an extent, yeah.
Do you guys want to pay for another streaming service?
No, I'm okay.
I mean, I wonder what the price will be.
Yeah, let's see the price. I'm going to be paying for our Amazon Prime Video because they have Unsolved Mysteries. And you guys know I'm a big fan of that show. Mm-hmm. So right now it's Netflix and Amazon Prime Video. I think I'll be okay with that unless something else comes up that's really going to grab my attention. But for the most part, I think...
Netflix is what, like $9, $10?
They raised it to $11, I think, now.
It's $11
a month. $10.99, $11 a month.
I think Crave is around the same.
Yeah.
And then I'm not sure what Amazon Prime is.
Amazon Prime Video for the whole year, it's like $35.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you guys think the price will be for the Disney one?
I'd probably see about $11, but I'm going to hold off on like subscribing because this could either be, I, at the risk of being a bandwagon jumper, I'm going to wait until the first bunch of reviews come out for their original content just because I don't want this to be another Yahoo screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I'm
good call, Braden.
Wary in general of, you know, every studio production company making their own streaming service because after a while it's just cable again but with streaming.
It's a dangerous precedent.
Will there be a Costco streaming service?
That would
I thought it was funny.
As long as you can get everything on their streaming service.
Yeah. You get the entire Disney catalog of animated movies.
But as much as I adore Disney. And I can't imagine. I don't need to make that case.
But exactly.
I can't imagine wanting to pay more than like $5 a month for this because it's just Disney.
I know, but at the same time, Disney's a big.
I mean, Disney's a lot of stuff now.
There's a lot.
It's a lot of stuff, but like if you go on Netflix or Crave, you have like thousands upon thousands of options.
Question.
On Disney, you have like again probably hundreds, but it's like it's got to be a fraction of what the other one options.
True.
Offer.
Question though, will they have Steamboat Willie?
Will they have Phil of the Future?
Yes.
What's the point of the Disney Vault going to be if they're just going to throw everything on?
Remember, if they don't have Recess in the Weekenders,
just throw things in the vault. You got to open the vault sometime.
Maybe it'll be called the Disney Vault or Disney Vault Stream Service, something like that. That would be.
That's a good idea.
Disney, hire me, please.
Yeah, please hire us.
I could totally see it as a thing where they're like, you know, limited time only from the vault on, you know, Disney streaming service, whatever it's called.
Ah.
You know, Movie X from the golden days or whatever.
Mm. What if there's actually a movie called Movie X?
I'm sure there is.
It's like Project X.
Well,
but we don't want to remember Project X.
We're typing in Movie X right now.
All right. Anyways, Tiago's searching Movie X.
It's called, X, Night of Vengeance.
There you go. I agree that I'm a little bit nervous. I was just kind of curious what you guys think.
No, it's fine.
Because we're all sort of in the thick of it where we have to budget how we're going to. And I agree. It's like it's... This is why we got rid of cable.
Yeah. Was there any other TV news?
I just want to make a shout out. I don't want to talk long about it, but the Trade Center was on today, and it is on TV.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I don't know if either of you guys are watching it, but those guys find a way to make not a lot of trades be tremendously interesting.
They do. They really do.
They had some like fake specials. They had will there be ketchup or something like that? Is there ketchup on that?
A mini documentary. Is there ketchup on that?
Is there ketchup on that? They raced the prime ministers. So just TSA. I mean, it's not hockey. Like, they weren't talking about hockey. They just tried to find a way to entertain people on TV. It's one day of the year thing. So.
They do a good job of doing that.
Shout out to them.
Shout out. Absolutely. A new kind of thing I want to try quickly before we go into West Wing. I just thought of it the other night. Today in television history. So just going to read off a few things that happened today on February 26th in television history. On February 26, 1984, CBS premiered Star Wars A New Hope on their network. The movie drew 36% of the total television viewing audience.
Cool.
February 26, 1990, the 100th episode of MacGyver aired. And let's see. Oh, February 26, 1998, a Texas jury rejected an $11 million lawsuit by Texas cattlemen who blamed Oprah Winfrey for price drop after an on-air comment about mad cow disease. And the final one, that's pretty interesting, 2002, February 26th, it was reported that NBC extended Conan O'Brien's contract with Late Night for 4 more years. So that is today in television history, February 26th. And on to the politics.
That's a cool segment, but you should get a little sound clip for that.
Wing.
Oh, actually, yeah, you're right. So you guys think I should have a little sound bite for today in television history?
Yeah. Could be like a little thing to do at the end
with
of the show.
With that exact sound effect.
Yeah, yeah, please. That exact.
Brayden, yes, let's start it off.
On to West Wing. Matt, start us off.
Okay.
Boom, boom.
Get that Aaron Sorkin dialogue going. Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah,
bang,
nice.
Yeah, but we're sitting still.
And the cutscenes. Yeah, and cutscenes. We need a lot of cutscenes here.
Yeah. So
you guys can't tell, but we're actually walking while we do this conversation.
Yeah, Simon and I are walking. Yeah. You guys are boom.
Yeah. So yeah, the West Wing was ran 1999 to 2006. It was a political drama originally written and produced by Aaron Sorkin. Very, very typical Aaron Sorkin. If you're a fan of Aaron Sorkin, this is totally going to be your thing. And it was basically, it revolved around the president and sort of his high-level staff in the White House. That's why it's titled The West Wing. He's sort of described it as a love letter to politics. You know, whether you agree or disagree with the political views of the people, of the characters in the show, it's a very optimistic view of politics and of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of, you know, in a perfect world, this is how our politicians would behave kind of show.
Yeah.
It's as Brayden and I were talking about before the show, sort of West Wing and House of Cards are very much on the opposite ends of the spectrum for political dramas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. West Wing is how people hope the White House works. House of Cards is how people fear the White House works. And Veep is how the White House actually works.
Ah, so. good connection there, you guys. Very, very good. Nicely done.
But honestly, the best thing in the show has to be the cast of characters. Like, the plots are really interesting, where it shows the behind the scenes working of the White House and what actually goes into these decisions and these policies and everything, and how they spin news. But the cast of characters, there is not a weak performance at all in this show.
Agree with that.
No,
yeah.
There's,
I agree.
I was literally trying to look up some of the awards that it had won, and there were too many that it became difficult to read. But like, I think there were 5 or 6 or 7 actors that won Emmys for best acting on this show. They had multiple actors win best lead actor, multiple actors win best supporting. It's really like a stellar cast across the board.
Allison Janney, she has a couple of primetime awards. Were those from West Wing?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
I'm just going to jump in quickly. The West Wing won, it says here on Wikipedia, 3 Golden Globe Awards and 26 Emmy Awards, including the award for Outstanding Drama Series, which it won 4 consecutive times from 2000 through 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. That's like, holy smoke.
Yeah, like, and so many of the actors have gone into, they were big names at the time, but they've gone on to be even bigger names, where you had Rob Lowe as Sam Seaborn, Allison Janney as CJ, who's the press secretary, Martin Sheen, of course, as the president, which I was reading up, he was only supposed to appear in like 4 episodes.
Yeah, the president originally was not going to be a big role in the show. Sam Seaborn, who is the deputy communications director, was going to be the main character.
Mm-hmm. Good old Rob
Lowe. Yeah, it was going to be focused around the communications staff. So, you know, sorry, the press secretary, Richard Schiff as the communications director, they were going to be the main characters, and Martin Sheen was just sort of like a side guy who'd come in every once in a while. And then they got through the first episodes and they're like, no, like, this is something special. This needs to be the focus of the show.
And it's like, even if there is a main character in the show, like after a bunch of episodes, it kind of shifts to Josh being the main character. Josh is like the deputy chief of staff in the White House. And he's the guy who kind of, he's the footman who gets everybody agreeing on policies and like kind of make sure everybody's in line. Like, later on, it just seemed like there was a lot more focus on Josh than it was on Sam.
Yeah,
really.
He sort of straddles the line between the communications side and the sort of, can't think of a name for the other side, but the sort of the more presidential side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because as the chief of staff, or deputy chief of staff, he's sort of technically in charge of the other people, so he sort of walks the line between the two sides of it, the more junior staff and the sort of the more presidential side of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then what's his name? Spencer.
John Spencer.
John Spencer, who plays the chief of staff, Leo.
Mm-hmm.
Such a great performance. I could listen to that man talk forever. It's just
Leo McGarry.
Yeah, the rumble in his voice and everything as he talks.
He has a great voice.
Yeah. He really does in that first episode when he's walking through there.
Oh yeah, and like other than Sam, I think he's the first character that they explore the personal life of.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like episode four is like his wife saying, "Okay, I want a divorce." And it goes on from that, where it's like that's a recurring thing. And they start to peer into the other cast lives, but he's the first character you really get that insight on. And you're just wondering, like, how are you holding everything together? Like, you are the coach of this White House.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's no spoilers, but as you get farther into the series, they go on a much bigger sort of deep dive into his character and sort of personal issues and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something they do with all of the characters. There's sort of, a few where they get into the more personal side of things. For the most part, they stick to politics. But I think when they do get into the more personal side, it still works extremely well. I mean, Leo's stuff is a big part of it. Josh gets some stuff that's like really heavy and emotional in later seasons. The main arc of season three is like a big personal thing with the president.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that with a lot of the characters.
Sam has his arc with the call girl, not a hooker.
Yeah, girl. Interesting. Very interesting.
And so that's really neat to see, just and like the kind of ethical dilemmas he's having to deal with, and he's like, I'm not doing anything wrong here, and that's another thing the show handles really well, like nuances on issues where unlike other shows where they might take like a black and white stance on it, where it's like the show kind of tackles all the different angles of it. And I was watching the show where I kind of went in with certain issues where I was like, okay, this is my stance, but then they argue and I'm like, okay, there's merit to all these different sides.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite aspects of the show is listening. You might think, oh, okay, yeah, they'll have this stance on whatever, but then listening to them argue about it back and forth, and going back and forth and hearing how smart these people are and the different ways that they break all these things down, that's one of my favorite aspects of the show, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Brayden, sorry to interrupt there, guys. I was going to say, Brayden, you were asking about Allison Janney and how many awards, that she won some awards from West Wing, right?
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I'm looking at it here, the list of awards. The actors throughout the series, these are the actors who won awards from the show. Alan Alda, love him. Stockard Channing, Allison Janney, Richard Schiff, Martin Sheen, John Spencer, and Bradley Whitford. Of those actors, Allison Janney won the most. She won three. She won the Emmy Award for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series, 2000 and 2001. She also won Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series, 2002 and 2004. And the Screen Actors Guild Award for Outstanding Performance by a Female Actor in a Drama Series, 2000 and 2001. So she cleaned the house and she led the awards.
You
for
rock, Allison Janney.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And one of the issues that I kind of went in on with like a preset idea in mind is like that it's a little one, but they make a whole episode of it, is census taking,
mm-hmm.
where it's like they're trying to get the Republicans to agree on like sample census rather than door to door census. And I was kind of before I'm going, well, door to door makes more sense. Like you actually get realistic or a much more actual view on people's lives and everything rather than just sample people. They talk about how homeless people aren't properly represented in a door-to-door census. Inner cities and rural areas, and it's a very limited section of society that actually is properly represented. And I was like, wow, that makes a ton of sense. They do that for every issue they tackle, where they don't say one side is wrong just because it's wrong, but they say this is why the other side is better. It's great. So
yeah, and they tackle really like a really wide range of issues. Like, I mean, there's some big, you know, like foreign policy sort of heavy dramatic stuff, but then there's, you know, like the census thing, or you know, there's another episode that focused on like reading government manuals. You know, they can get down to like really sort of small mundane things and still make it interesting. Mm-hmm. They do a handful of episodes through the series where they call them Leo's Big Block of Cheese Day.
Yeah.
Which is an allusion to a former president who had literally a giant block of cheese in the foyer of the White House.
Andrew Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, Andrew Jackson, where like anyone could just, you know, come and have some. You know, an opportunity for people who normally wouldn't come into the White House to come and have meetings and do this kind of stuff. So he would set up these big block of cheese days where they would meet specifically with groups that they wouldn't normally, you know, have time to get to with all these little issues. So, and they end up usually being quite comical because some of these things are like very small. Like they have a meeting about a wolves only highway, or, you know, that they should pay more attention to UFOs and things like that. But then you take these small sort of silly ideas and they like really actually get into them in a, you know, a very sort of like well-intentioned way. And you break it down. It's funny, but you sort of see all the stuff that goes on behind it. It's really interesting.
Especially that wildlife one. Cause like, it's funny because like Nick Offerman is in that scene, and Nick Offerman is from Parks and Rec. We all know him. And as soon as I saw him in the credits at the beginning of the episode, I'm like, oh God, there's going to be a comedy section with Nick Offerman. I'm excited. But he's in that scene where they're explaining the wildlife highway, and there's comedy in that scene, but it's played pretty straight. And as soon as I was done that episode, I went on Reddit just to check the news. And that's actually something that they did end up opening up just recently in the Western United States, like a highway for wildlife to travel. And
really?
Apparently it's actually pretty successful. So I was like, wow,
that's awesome.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want a show to watch for like big name people in small little bit parts, the West Wing is a good place to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's with all the different, you know, meetings that they have with different people, there's so many just sort of like one-off, you know, one scene characters that are played by like fairly big name people now.
Yeah.
Like I think Jane Lynch is a reporter for like an episode and a half or something like that. Like there's a lot of people are like, oh, hey, it's that guy. Oh, hey, it's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Happens a lot.
Yeah. It's like Tiaga, you were mentioning at the beginning, there are a lot of cuts and everything.
Yeah.
That like, that's true. But I'm remembering there's actually a lot of really long takes. Like the joke of the show is people walking all over the place as they're talking, because that gives the illusion of busyness and motion.
Absolutely.
But like, I'm just thinking, there's like solid two or three scenes where it's people walking down the hallway with the camera in front of them, and these people deliver their lines perfectly. They don't mess it up at all for like three solid minutes.
They don't miss a beat.
They don't miss a beat at all. It's crazy. And you see that a lot where it's like people give Goodfellas a lot of praise for like that scene where they're going through like the jazz club and they go through the restaurant and everything.
The one shot.
Yeah. They do this like at least once an episode on West Wing.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, that's sort of what it became known for, was the quick banter dialogue and the long shot walk and talks.
Yeah.
I mean, like for me, and I think the general consensus, like best episode of the series, the sort of, you know, climactic scene in that is like a 3-minute monologue of Martin Sheen just like walking down the aisle in the National Cathedral in Washington.
Yeah. I didn't have time to watch everything, but I did watch that episode.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's called Two Cathedrals. I think it's like this last episode of season two. It takes a little bit of setup, but for me, that is honestly one of the best episodes of TV ever. Yeah.
For me, I only watched the first couple episodes. I mean, it was a busy reading week, but I really like the show. I really like, I was saying, you know, Brayden, I like the cut scenes. I like the dialogue. This is kind of like early Sorkin, and it just kind of, it immersed me into that world of, okay, like, let's see how his brain moves and, look at how he makes all these real issues that happen in real life relevant within the show. He intertwines them within these characters. And, like, there's, we were saying it in the newsroom, I don't find that there's at any point useless dialogue. Like, everything fits. It's like clockwork. It ticks. It works. It moves together. And at the end of the first episode, I really liked the last 5 minutes when I can't remember what was the situation.
Was it with Martin Sheen and like the religious conservatives?
Yeah, the religious conservatives, and then the president walks in, and he just kind of like, everyone's in awe, and they shut up, and they just look at him, and then he just kind of serves justice, and he's like, "Now get out of the White House," and it's like, ah, love it.
Yeah, his first line is, "I am the Lord your God."
Yeah,
it's like,
you shall have no other gods before me.
Yeah, because they couldn't figure out what the first commandment was, and he comes in, and I'm like, oh. Holy smoke.
Yeah, great intro line.
Absolutely.
Which is actually, like, he does that a lot where he kind of, like, he's a very religious man in the show, but he tears down religious conservatives.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah. I haven't gotten to the episode yet, but, the first clip of West Wing I ever saw was him with the anti-gay rights group. Mm-hmm. And, they quote a lot of, Old Testament and everything. And he completely strips them down by going, oh, well, you're wearing clothing of mixed fabrics and everything. That's outlawed in the Bible. Oh, and he just points everything these people do and going, yeah, you know what? By the way, you're going to hell a lot sooner than these people who just love each other and everything. It's just...
What's that scene? It's also, I believe, religious.
Mm-hmm.
The famous, when the president stands, nobody sits.
Yeah.
I think that's I mean, before I watched the show, that was certainly the scene that I most knew the show for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's another classic. I do want to, before we move on too far to other stuff about the show, you were talking about the clockwork in an interview, and I might have mentioned last year at the newsroom, but I'll mention it again. There's a fantastic YouTube channel called Lessons from the Screenplay.
Right.
Where a guy goes through screenplay and he focuses on writers, which is why it's so conducive to Aaron Sorkin. Mm-hmm. And he plays a couple Aaron Sorkin interviews where he's talking, in that case, he was talking about The Social Network, but it very much applies to The Newsroom and to West Wing, where he says he writes dialogue like it's music. So it has to flow. It goes up, but up, but up. And when you're watching it, it's like, holy smokes, he does.
It really does.
It doesn't play like your standard dialogue because it has it's
everything
it goes,
moves
it goes
like
back
this,
and forth. Yeah,
it's
it
very rhythmic.
It is rhythmic, exactly.
It's smooth.
Right.
Yeah,
that's what he said. He went he was just big into going to plays as a kid, and that's why he wrote a couple plays. And when he heard dialogue, it sounded to him like music, and that's how he writes, and it really works. And for as much as a cliche as the walk and talk is, it's a cliche because it's so effective.
Yeah,
it's
so great.
It works so well.
Oh, sorry.
It makes every scene that they're in seem that much more interesting. Mm-hmm. Where a lesser show, might have just two characters arguing over a table.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're moving. It does feel more dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. And Aaron Sorkin says when he writes those things, they're not coming from anywhere. They're not going anywhere. They're just walking. And for the audience, that creates the illusion
that they're going somewhere.
Yeah, that creates the illusion of busyness and just and dynamicness.
Like
dynamicness?
That scene.
Is that a word?
Dynamicism, I'd say.
Dynamicism.
It makes it feel dynamic.
Dynamic nature.
There you go.
Yeah, sure.
Like in that in the pilot episode when Leo and the Reverend are walking and they're walking outside the White House. Mm-hmm. It's like, I was like, where are they going? But the dialogue was just flowing between those two. It was just like Leo's talking, Reverend's talking. It's bouncing off each other. And also I was going to say, Braden, how you were saying how the president is very religious. It's actually, I was reading up today just randomly because I think Martin Sheen's a great actor. That whole, I guess the beliefs from the president kind of reflects Martin Sheen's beliefs in real life because he's very devout Catholic and whatnot, but he stands for, same-sex marriage and all that stuff. So when you brought that up, I was like, yeah, it kind of reflects on Martin Sheen's actual personality because that's how he is.
And that's probably partly why he's...
Yeah, exactly. Why he's the president, yeah.
I was talking to Mike about it earlier, and he couldn't quite remember, but I think I'll ask you the question, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
After 9/11, was there a tonal shift in the show? He said they kind of have an episode where they tackle something similar to 9/11, but in the way the show is written, in the way the show is presented, in the later seasons after 9/11, did it lose some of that idealism? Did it lose some of that, we're gonna do what's right and everything? Just that nuance. Did it lose any of that?
I wouldn't say it loses any of the idealism. The themes of Islamic fundamentalism and stuff like that definitely plays a bigger role in the show afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, they did a special episode basically directly in response to that. It's called Isaac and Ishmael. They put it together in something like a week and a half. But 9/11 in the world of the West Wing never actually happened. It's not a plot point in the show at any point. I'd say it's something they address more often, especially in the last three seasons after, because Aaron Sorkin left the show after the fourth season.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say foreign policy and especially foreign policy dealing with the Middle East and things like that is a much bigger part of the last three or four seasons. So there's not really a snap change, now this is what the show is about.
Mm-hmm.
But it, in bits and pieces becomes a slightly, a bigger part of the show.
Yeah. I'm reading here right now and it says following the attacks, the start of the third season was postponed for a week as were most American television premieres that year. And the script for a special episode, like you said, Braden, Isaac and Ishmael, Matt. Sorry, my apologies. it was written and the episode received mixed critical reviews. And then it also says here on Wikipedia, thank you, Wikipedia, while the September 11 attacks are not referenced in the West Wing continuity, the country enters into a variation of the war on terrorism. So it doesn't necessarily reference it or mention it on hand, but it just kind of plays around the whole idea of terrorism.
Yeah, it does become a bigger part of the show.
Yeah.
And while we're talking about sort of special episodes, they did another special episode in, I believe it was the 7th season, that I'd also like to mention. It was, I think it's titled The Debate. So basically the last season is spent sort of half and half between the White House and then the campaign for who will be the next president.
That's when Jimmy Smits comes in.
Yeah,
right?
Jimmy Smits and Alan Alda are the two candidates.
Yes, Alan Alda.
Yeah. And for me, it's the strongest season since sort of the early seasons. But they did a debate episode, which was done like a live play. It was broadcast live. It was not shot like a regular episode of TV.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy
smokes. And I believe they won an award for that episode.
Nice.
But it was, they did also sort of a documentary episode where you can see them sort of the making of as it's going live on TV. But they did it live twice, I believe. It was once for the East Coast and once for the West Coast. And so, yeah, that was just another sort of special episode, I guess, that I wanted to mention. Yeah.
Well, very much like a play.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, that's how they described it as they were doing it.
Nice.
Any final thoughts before we cast this ship off and set sail?
I got to appreciate, like, one little thing as well. It's like they don't, in the first season, they don't try to paint it as, like, America, the beautiful America, the best. They do reference a lot of, like, America's darker history as well. And in, like, one of the episodes I was watching earlier was the episode where they have the president from Jakarta come in,
yeah,
and they specifically reference how he's the first democratic leader they've had in a while, just because the U.S. has been propping up dictators and that in Jakarta and or rigging elections. So it's a little moments, but I appreciate, yeah, you're not completely blind to the negatives of your country.
Yeah, it's very optimistic and generally lighthearted, but they don't shy away at all from the darker side of things, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They are patriotic about it, but they're also not like, oh, nothing's wrong, we do have a darker side, as you said.
Yeah, yeah, there's the dark stuff, but it's very much like a love letter to politics.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's what you said earlier in the show, right? And also, I read it somewhere online, too. So if someone was like, Matt, Brayden, guys, West Wing, what should I do? Like what's one thing you'd say? You had one thing to say about West Wing. How would you sell it to someone to watch it?
If you love listening to smart people, be witty back and forth. This is your show.
Yeah.
Okay. Brayden?
Snappy dialogue, spoken by charming people as they lead a country and battle serious issues.
Perfect. Love it. Speaking of time, we're all out of it for today's episode, but tune in next week. Thank you. Thank you. But tune in next week for another great episode. I think we're doing revival shows next week, right? I
believe so.
Yeah, revival shows next week, 5:30, same time, same place. And then after that, we have a three-part special, so you listeners will not want to miss out on the next few TV Talkers, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Signing out for the TV Talkers this week, it is
Matt,
Brayden,
Simon,
and Tiago. Have a great week, everyone. We will see you soon.